Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, it's time to talk about recruiting. Last weekend was a big recruiting weekend with the only live evaluation period of the spring. And on the heels of that, as you've probably heard, in-state prospects Trey Galloway and Anthony Leal both got offers from Indiana during in-home visits with Archie Miller on Monday. So we're going to talk about that. Talk about those two guys, their games, what they would potentially bring to Bloomington, as well as some other guys who have gotten offers and some other IU targets that Archie and the staff are hot on the heels of. To do that, Alex Bozich is here. He's had a chance to talk with Trey and Anthony since they got their offers. And we're also joined by John Sauber, who covers IU basketball, football, and recruiting for our friends over at thehoosier.com. He's joined Stu Jackson on their podcast, Heard on the Hoosier. I've really been impressed with his insight on guys like Leal and Galloway. And he's had a chance to get out and see those guys play, as has Alex. So we'll really be able to get both of their perspectives on these players, what they could potentially bring to Bloomington, as well as the other targets Indiana is looking at. So all of that is coming this week on Podcast on the Brink. Here we go. Let's talk recruiting.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, gentlemen. Well, let's talk about the subjects that are on every IU fan's mind right now, which, you know, obviously is recruiting. And obviously, whenever in-state kids get offers, it's something that Indiana fans are very excited about, very interested in. And so there are a lot of prospects to discuss. But let's talk off the top about Anthony Leal from Bloomington South, Trey Galloway from Culver, both of whom got offers from Indiana yesterday during in-home visits. By Archie Miller. And John, I'll start with you, and maybe, you know, let's start with Trey. He got the first offer, right? His visit came first, and then Anthony came after that. So let's start with Trey. Your thoughts on Indiana offering, and your general thoughts on him as a player and how he's progressed.
Yeah, I'm not all that surprised that they offered. I'd heard he played well down in Dallas this weekend when Tom Oakstrom and Archie Miller had the chance to see him play. Now, as a player, and I've sort of always been on this train of he's not sort of what they're looking for right now. And I was kind of surprised, you know, that they've been as heavily in on him as they have. He can't shoot right now. And I mean, as everybody saw this year, that's a pretty major issue. And he actually has some serious flaws with his shot that have me concerned, you know, of what kind of shooter he can be at the next level. Now, those can get corrected. He can become a better shooter. But he has a thumb flick, which, you know, Steph Curry has one, Kyrie Irving has one. They usually don't matter all that much. But for him, it pushes his shots left and right, and he starts to overthink his shot. And when he's not, you know, thinking properly about a shot and he's not shooting in rhythm, then all of a sudden his shot becomes a major issue. And I saw him take one shot up at Warren Central a couple weekends ago in the Adidas Midwest qualifier, and he hit top left backboard, and he was from the left wing. So it wasn't like, you know, he was down on the baseline. He just, you know, was a little bit erratic. This was a pretty brutal shot, and sort of that's what you get with him. You know, sometimes their shots are going to be pretty erratic. Now, that's not to discredit him as a player. He's a very good player. I just, you know, don't know about the fit. Right now, he has to have the ball in his hands to succeed. He's best when he's attacking the rim on offense, and when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he looks kind of, well, when I saw him anyways, he looked kind of lost out there. So I have some concerns about what kind of player he can be in an off-ball role. If he were to end up at IU, and you know, with the way the roster is currently constructed, how he would play within that offensive system.
So, you know, that's the offensive part of it. And obviously there are some weaknesses there. It's my understanding, and I haven't seen him play, so I come at this just from kind of reading scouting reports, seeing a few highlight videos. But from my understanding, the biggest positives he would bring are kind of his mentality and his basketball IQ and kind of being that leader and a culture guy, and also that he's a really good defender. Which, you know, would seem to, at least for those two attributes, fit what Archie Miller is trying to build, even if the shooting isn't where it needs to be or maybe where it will ever need to be. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a very good defender, and he's an intense defender too. And of course, sometimes that can lead to some overplays, and he can get caught off balance and beat off the dribble because of it. But generally speaking, he's a very good defender. I was pretty impressed with him. He doesn't have ideal length for someone that's listed at 6'5". But you know, that's okay. This is college basketball. We're not talking about the NBA here. He doesn't need to have like a 6'11 wingspan or anything like that. He can probably guard 1 through 3. He's physical enough to hang with a lot of fours. But you know, we'll see if he's ever asked to do that in college. But yeah, he can definitely guard 1 through 3, and he can do it well. I worry about, you know, guys with speed can beat him off the dribble. Like I said, he struggles a little bit with, if he gets a little bit too intense and too up in guys' face, he can get caught off balance and beat. And that happened a couple of times when I saw him. But generally speaking, he's a very good defender. And like you said, that mentality and that sort of grit and toughness is something that he's always going to bring to the table. And, you know, something that this team kind of needed a lot last year.
Yeah, I haven't seen Galloway play this year. But the memory that always sticks in my mind is the first year Archie Miller had his team camp in Bloomington. It was the summer of 2017. And everyone was kind of focused on Jerome Hunter because he was there and he was kind of one of the main guys at the team camp, and they played a game on the court in Assembly Hall, and they played Culver Academies, and there was this kid that was going toe to toe with Jerome Hunter and kind of matching him shot for shot and just a ultra competitor, and I kind of asked around, who is that kid, and someone said, oh, that's Trey Galloway. And that was kind of the thing that always stuck in my mind, is, you know, here he is going up against a kid who's, you know, a top 50 recruit, giving up a couple inches, and he didn't give one inch. And when I talked to Trey yesterday after he got the offer, the one thing he talked about a lot that the coaching staff had emphasized to him was they liked his competitiveness and his drive to, you know, to be a part of, you know, a team and contribute to winning. And in every program, you've got to have guys who are, you know, going to be your 6th, 7th, 8th man, who are going to help contribute to winning. Not every kid that you can get can be a 5-star stud. And I think in a lot of ways, both Anthony Leal and Trey Galloway kind of fit the bill of maybe a guy who doesn't come in that starts right away or even plays major minutes right away, but down the line you can see them developing. And Trey Galloway is the son of a coach. I think he's been very well coached. He kind of knows what it takes to get better. I think he's going to work. And so for those reasons, you know, John is right in terms of the shooting. You know, his numbers haven't been terrific, but I think you have to look at the full body in terms of, you know, is this kid going to continue to work hard to get better? Is he competitive? Is he the kind of guy that's going to buy into the team concept and maybe will be willing to accept a role? And I think you look at all those things with Trey Galloway, and I think you have to be encouraged with what you see there.
It's also my understanding that he dealt with an injury last year, right, during the high school season. And John, I know, you know, you said, you know, when you saw him shoot, he struggled. Could part of that have been the injury, or do you just think that there's some real mechanical flaws there independent of injury that are going to need to get corrected?
Yeah, he definitely dealt with a thumb injury, which, you know, gave him some issues with his shooting. But from people I talked to around there, you know, I don't think it had too much of an impact on his shooting ability. And you can see it in his free throws too. Like some of it, they can be really erratic. Like I'm talking, he's hitting back rim hard and it's bouncing back towards him. He's hitting a hard left rim, and like the consistency really isn't there. And that's what it comes down to. Even if you have, you know, that thumb flick, like I mentioned, or if unconventional mechanics, like if you can be consistent, you can shoot it well. And there's some serious inconsistency there. And the thumb could have played a role, but it doesn't sound like to me that it played too big of a role. especially with how bad it was on some games. And again, this isn't to knock the kid. I think he's a very good player. I wonder about his fit with this roster, and especially considering one of the other players you're going after in the 2020 class, Ethan Morton, and sort of he can bring some of those similar things to the table, you know, if there's a little bit too much overlap there. Well, and to be clear, Galloway's a far superior defender to Morton, but I think he can, some of those intangibles you guys have mentioned, I think he can bring to the table and is a better offensive player and more suited for Indiana's needs right now.
You know, it's always kind of interesting, you know, to I know player comps are always imperfect, and so feel free to just toss this in the garbage can if you want to. But when I hear people talk about him, you know, and a guy that a lot of people have known because they've been on the national radar a lot was from Virginia, Ty Jerome. And obviously he was a very good shooter, so that part of the comparison isn't going to be good. Is it fair at all to compare? Because, you know, Trey obviously, you know, offensively is very skilled at getting to the basket, good defender, kind of that leader type. Would it be fair as a comparison to say he's like a Ty Jerome but without the jump shot, that that's kind of what he could bring?
I always compared him to sort of a poor man's Aaron Kraft back in Ohio State, which, you know, he – because he's sort of that grit and toughness and that competitive nature that he has and that he brings to the floor, but the shooting just isn't there. And I that's why I think the Jerome statement sort of falls short, because the shooting is what opens everything up for Ty Jerome. It's not, you know, just that he's a good shooter and that is isolated in itself. Because he's a good shooter, his attacking ability is better. He's better off the ball because of it. And that's where, you know, Galloway struggles. He's not as good off the ball because he can't spot around the 3-point arc and, you know, consistently take those threes. I'm not a fan of the Jerome comparison, but I definitely, you know, at least understand it and get where you're coming from.
I just love watching Ty Jerome play, so I think I'm desperate to
find most people do.
Potential incoming Hoosier that compares to him. Okay, so let's move on to Anthony Leal, a guy who has been talked about a ton because he's right in Indiana's backyard at Bloomington South High School, and because, you know, the kind of one elite or really good skill that he has is the thing that Indiana needs more than anything after these last two seasons, which is shooting. So talk to me, John, about your thoughts on Leal, and then Alex, let's kind of get your scouting report on, you know, the strengths that Anthony has, and then maybe what are some of the weaknesses that, you know, the coaching staff kind of wanted to be convinced about before they decided to offer.
Yeah, I'm actually a big fan of Anthony Leal's game. I started here in November, seen him play 5 or 6 times pretty quickly because he's, you know, local, it's easy to get to, and the opportunity, chance to watch him play is something I didn't want to pass up, because I saw a kid that he's a very, very good shooter. He's not a great shooter because his release is a little slow and it takes him a little while to get it off. So at the beginning, when I saw him play, you know, he's struggling to get that shot off, and you see him develop over the few months. He's developed this step back move that he can take to his left or his right, and it allows him to get the time and space he needs to get that shot off. And to me, that's sort of going to be crucial for him at the next level, because he has to be able to get that space. He's very good off the catch, and that's not going to be an issue. It just, like I said, takes him a little bit of time to get that shot off. He's not a great creator. He's a good passer, but sometimes he sees a pass a little bit too late and it causes a turnover. He's all right attacking the rim. He needs to learn to finish through contact a little better and not be, you know, swayed by that contact once he gets hit. And defensively, he's not laterally quick, but I don't think he's much slower laterally than Galloway is. He puts the effort in, and he like Galloway, can overplay guys sometimes. It leads to him getting beat off the dribble by quickness, but he's a little less switchable, I would say. You know, maybe 2s and 3s at the next level just because of his strength. He could also hang with some 4s depending on the team you're looking at and the style that they play. But I don't think he's going to be able to stick with 1s as easily just because of the lack of lateral quickness. But I've always been a big fan of his game, and because that shot opens up so much for him, if he can quicken that release at all, he has a chance to be a very special shooter at the next level.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what John said, and Jared, we've talked offline about this. Leal's one of the guys that I really like the most from the 2020 class, not just because he's from Bloomington, and you know that obviously you kind of have to look at every situation and every recruit that you pursue in terms of the resources that you want to put towards recruiting a kid. With a kid being right there in your backyard, I think it's a no-brainer to try to add a guy like Anthony Leal, not only because of some of the intangibles he brings, but the fact that Indiana was one of the worst shooting teams in the country last year. And if you surround him with other talented players, he's going to be a guy that can spot up and knock down shots for you. John mentioned his shot is not the quickest to release. I think that's something he can improve upon as time goes on. I think he's been very well coached, obviously, at Bloomington South under J.R. Holmes. Is one of the best to ever do it. And I think he's also, in a lot of ways, like Galloway, a guy who is competitive, has always been a part of winning teams. I think you have to look at that when you're going after a recruit. Do you want a guy who's going into a grassroots situation where he's averaging 25 a game, but his team's not winning? Or do you want a guy who's playing winning teams, playing winning ball? Maybe he only has, you know, 8 or 10 points in a game, but he picks up a couple steals. He makes the extra pass. He's willing to dive on the floor for loose balls. Small things like that are ultimately what, in many ways, contribute to winning. And I think Anthony Leal is going to fit that bill. And I think he's a guy like Galloway who, you know, maybe doesn't come in from day one and make a huge impact, but, you know, year three or four, you're going to be really happy to have a guy like that on your roster. So I don't think you can go wrong with Anthony Leal. I think there's been some question marks with in terms of his athleticism and who does he guard at the next level. But in many ways, I think being successful in the pack line defense is a lot about technique and learning positioning and being willing to work and improve. And, you know, I think Anthony Leal is going to be able to do all those things. So I think that's definitely an offer that Indiana fans should be excited about. And just from talking to him last night, he definitely is excited. I know his family would be thrilled to have the chance to watch him play close to home. And the other thing with him is, you know, in terms of the school list that he gave me, Trey Galloway reeled off a pretty lengthy school list, and now Michigan's kind of getting involved. But Leal really only named two or three other schools that he's really been hearing from regularly. I know Stanford was one of them, Northwestern, and he said Virginia's kind of picked it up. But, you know, the competition for Leal may be a little bit less than with Galloway.
Why do you think that is? Because, you know, you both have stated the reasons why you know, kind of like Leal maybe better than Galloway, or feel like he might project better to the next level, or perhaps maybe it's just that he's a better fit for this Indiana roster. Why do you think that the list, Alex, is a little bit more lengthy for Trey than it is for Anthony at this point?
I don't know. I mean, it can be a matter of just who sees a kid at a certain time when he's playing well. It could also be related to the fact that the kid's from Bloomington and some schools figure that Indiana's going to offer eventually. And why put a lot of time into this kid if Indiana's just going to offer and get him? I mean, there is some, like I said, going back to what I said about putting in time and effort and resources, if you have a feeling that a kid is in another school's backyard and has built a pretty good relationship with him, I don't necessarily think that you're going to, if you think he's going to IU, which I'm not saying that he is, but I think Indiana's got a really good shot there. So maybe that's kind of scared off some of the other schools that could potentially come in. But he's a really good player. I mean, I don't like to, you know, say who's better. I think both guys would be good for IU. Obviously, the coaching staff sees appropriate for to offer both guys. And I don't necessarily think it's an either or situation. I don't think you offer two guys on the same day and say, hey, this is first come, first serve. That's just not the way you want to conduct business, especially on guys with guys who are on the same AAU team. That's just not really the way you want to go about things. So I think they would take both if both wanted to commit. And I really don't think you could go wrong with either one. But to answer to long-winded answer to your question, but I think the proximity to Bloomington may have a little bit to do with less schools being involved with Leal than Galloway at this point. John, any thoughts from you? You may have some insight too.
Yeah, I think that plays a pretty big role in it. And with Galloway, he played really well this past weekend from what I heard down in Dallas at the Adidas Gauntlet Series. And so a bunch of coaches were obviously there because this is a live period and they could watch him, so it could lead to more offers where Leal didn't play as well. So, you know, that could lead to less increased interest. But I think a lot of it is what you said. And as far as before this weekend, he's from Bloomington. It's sort of presumed if Indiana offers, you know, they're going to be the team to beat. So why waste your time and resources? We saw this with Jaden Ivey, who was, you know, getting some Indiana interest up in Mishawaka, Marion, but his mom is an assistant for the Notre Dame women's team. So, you know, a lot of teams were not, you know, getting too heavily involved there. Of course, he ended up committing to Purdue, which, you know, went against everything that everyone believed. But it's sort of the same situation as that, where, you know, you see such a strong connection to a school that it's tough to see them going somewhere else. And it's kind of a waste of time and resources to try and sway them when, you know, you don't have much of a chance and you have limited time to do it too. Now with the changes that the NCAA has made to the recruiting calendar.
Yeah. You know, look, neither one of these recruitments is a slam dunk by any means, because if it was, then as soon as Archie mentioned the offer, they would have taken it, and neither one did, and they both said that they want to explore their options. That said, there are plenty of reasons to believe that Indiana is at the top or near the top of both guys' lists now. So, you know, John, would you be surprised at this point if Indiana didn't land at least one of these guys, and would you be at all surprised if they did end up getting both of them?
I wouldn't be surprised if they landed at least one. I kind of would be surprised if they landed both, and it's not about fit. It's more about, you know, Trey's interest in other schools. And he does have strong interest in those other schools that Alex mentioned. You know, Notre Dame, Michigan picked up interest. Michigan State's interested in them. Purdue's interested in them. And so Indiana's coming in a little later than those guys, so they're behind. I'm not expecting him to be at Indiana, you know, as of now, but these things change. You know, it's he just got an offer yesterday. Like, they can change rapidly in recruiting. But yeah, I would be surprised if they didn't get at least one, but I would also be surprised if they landed both at this point in time.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
You know, obviously those two guys were the headliners yesterday because they're in-state names, guys that Indiana fans are very, very aware of. But Alex, you were one of the first to report yesterday about another offer that went out, and that's from Matt Cross, who, where's he from? Is he from Pennsylvania too, like some of the other guys that Indiana has been going after? No, he's from Connecticut.
Woodstock, yeah, he's from, originally from Massachusetts. I think he's going to a prep type school in Connecticut, but he plays for BABC, which is on the EYBL circuit.
What can you tell us about Matt Cross? Seems like a pretty good shooter, which is music to all Indiana fans' ears.
Yeah, I was able to get some video of two of his games from over the weekend and posted some highlights on the site. To me, he looks like a, and this is obviously just from watching two AAU games, so take it with a grain of salt, but looks like about 6'7", 6'8", kid who can stretch the floor and also take it a little bit off the dribble, not afraid to mix it up in the paint. And he really kind of blew up, it sounds like, over the weekend, just from texting with him a little bit. I know Illinois was a school that came in with a scholarship offer, Butler, IU, several others. He actually, as we were recording here, I was texting him, and he said that Indiana is going to come in tomorrow for an in-home visit. So that's, it seems like he's built a pretty good relationship so far with Bruiser Flint. Said he's really starting to just get to know Archie Miller a little bit. But Archie called him over the weekend and delivered the scholarship offer on the phone. Based on his quotes, it sounded like something that he was very interested in. John may have seen him obviously in person, may have a little bit of insight on him, but, you know, averaging 22 points a game over four games in the EYBL is going to open some eyes, and it definitely looks like Cross did that over the weekend.
Yeah, John, yeah. You were down in Atlanta this weekend.
Yep, it was, like I said, a lot of fun down there. Always good to see 12 basketball games going on at once. Never going to complain about doing that. But yeah, I didn't see Cross for full games just because I was out and about and trying to watch as many guys as I can. But I did catch some glimpses of him, and his stroke is very clean. He's going to be a good shooter. I feel pretty confident about that. Like Alex said, he can take it off the dribble a little bit, but I don't expect that to be where he excels. I think he's going to be best as a catch and shoot guy at the next level. He has the size to do that effectively too, and the size to defend. You know. And be a little bit more versatile defender. You can hide him on some bigger guys if you have to. But right now it's all about that shot, and he's going to make shots at the next level, and he's going to do it at a fairly consistent rate.
Who else was in Atlanta that you saw in terms of IU targets?
Yeah, so the two 2020 guys I was focusing on were Ethan Morton and Caleb Love. Similar positions, I guess. I don't, you know, use positions a lot with basketball anymore because that seems where we're heading. But Love and Morton both would probably be primary ball handlers at the next level. Love is a more athletic force. You know, he can get to the rim whenever he wants. He's bigger and stronger than most kids his age. The shot actually came around a lot. I believe he shot 9 of 18 from three over the weekend. I might be wrong on that, but he you know was very good as a shooter when I saw him. He looked mechanically sound. And I think he'd be a legitimate shooter at the next level. The issue is he has some turnover issues. He tries to force passes. He, you know, gets a little bit too extravagant sometimes with some of the passes he makes, and that can lead to turnovers. His handle isn't as tight as you'd want it to be. But I think, you know, he's a chance, and he's going to get national interest, and he already has some that Indiana's going to be in a dogfight for if they want to get him. And as far as Ethan Morton, he's, like I said, I compared him a little bit to Trey Galloway and the sort of grit and toughness and everything you want, you know, that sort of team player mentality. And I've never seen someone communicate so much on the basketball court in my entire life. He's talking every single second he's out there. He's calling out every single action that the offense runs when he's on defense. He's calling out the defense that they're running. He's telling his teammates when to pass on offense. He's constantly communicating. And it's not like it's unwanted either. His teammates clearly have a ton of respect for him and listen to him. And I caught him a few times, like he would start screaming, talk to me when he was on defense. And then all of a sudden the defensive intensity picked up and everyone starts talking to him, calling out screens, calling out down screens that were about to free up a shooter for Drive Nation, who I saw them play. And I mean, I was just amazed by how much as a 17, 18 year old kid, this kid is talking on the court, how much respect he has on a team that has some high level talent. Now he's also a very good passer and has great court vision. He's not a good shooter right now from anywhere beyond the mid range, but I think it should come along. I don't think he's ever going to be a great shooter, but I think he can get to below average or average, which is fine. But that passing ability is wonderful to watch. The communication is wonderful to watch, and he can really navigate the lane well offensively to sort of pick his spots. And you know, if a defender sags off, he pops that floater up and gets it in. And he was one of my most fun players to watch this weekend, just because it's not something you see at that level of basketball. And you know, he's not a great athlete either, so he's not going to defend all that well at the next level. But he's a smart defender, so he's going to be in position consistently, and you're rarely going to see him get him caught off balance with stuff like that.
I love everything I hear about him. And it sounds like Indiana's in a really good position with him. He's another guy, by the way, that I'm holding out hope can be a Ty Jerome type player for Indiana down the road.
That was more accurate.
Yeah. Okay, so we know about Love and Morton. Those guys have had IU offers for a while. Cross, Leal, and Galloway. Who else in the class of 2020 has offers right now from Indiana that we haven't mentioned?
So not a lot of guys right now. They're monitoring a lot of guys. Two guys that I watched this weekend that don't have offers that, Indiana had a heavy coaches in attendance for. They had, you know, Ed Schilling, Bruiser Flint, and Archie Miller were all down there at various points in time. They were all watching these guys at various points in time. One of them is RJ Davis, played for the New York Wrens with Ethan Morton. He looks to be about 6'2". He's a bit of a scoring guard. Well, not a bit of a scoring guard. One game I watched him, I think he shot 5 of 6 from three, and he lit it up. And it was that game against Drive Nation, who has RJ Hampton, who's a top five player in the 2020 class, and Davis took it to him. No fear. He just went right at him, took him to the rim a couple of times, beat him with a step back on the wing a couple of times, and you know, was a lot of fun to watch in general. Great quickness, great with the ball in his hands, keeps his dribble alive and sees the floor really well. He might struggle a little bit if he's asked to switch it all defensively, but he's a primary ball handler. You're not going to ask him to do that a whole lot. But he has a lot of upside, I think. And right now we have him as a 3-star on Rivals, and I think he's got the potential to be much more than that. As teams and, you know, scouting services and recruiting services see him on the circuit this summer. And the other primary one that I watched anyways was Nigel Pack, who sort of fills that similar role. He's a smaller guard. He's smaller than Davis. Even he's, if I had to guess, he's closer to 5'10" than this listed 6 foot. But he can really score at all three levels, and he's very savvy when he gets into the lane. You know, he, like Morton, he can find that open space. He can find teammates from the lane, keeping his dribble alive while he's doing it. He's going to struggle to defend at the next level, no question, just because of that size. But I mean, you see it with someone like Carson Edwards, who doesn't have great size, but is an elite player because he can score it whenever he wants to. And I think, I'm not saying Pack's going to be Carson Edwards, but he, you know, has that upside as a scorer, and he really does a good job of at least staying engaged defensively and getting up in his opponent's face and making sure that they know he's there, even though he is smaller. So he stays physical at least, which is, you know, something you can hang your hat on defensively, even if you don't have the physical tools to match up with your opponent.
Alex, any other names that Indiana fans should be keeping their eye on in this class? I mean, you know, recruiting is interesting to talk about right now because, you know, we're looking at the 2020 class, but Indiana still has two scholarships open for next season. So, you know, right now we don't even know how big that class will be, how many scholarship offers are out there. You know, you look at it right now with, you know, Deron Davis and Devontae Green projected to graduate and the two scholarships that are open. You know, you could have as many as 4 scholarships open for that class. We'll have to see how that all plays out. But any other names to look at? Anything else that you're looking at recruiting-wise right now?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you're kind of feel like you're stuck between two classes at this point. I mean, you got 2019 still out there, and I think everyone's kind of curious, I guess, to an extent on Lester. I don't want to butcher his last name.
Quinones.
There you go. And Trenton Watford. But I mean, I don't necessarily think either of those situations are going to work out in Indiana's favor. And so it's tough because I think there's some pressure next year to, obviously we've talked a little bit about, you know, needing to make the tournament next year, and how do you do that without improving the shooting? Is it going to have to come from within somehow? I guess there's not, you know, a chance that something else could still shake loose with a grad transfer or somebody else, but it kind of looks like the options are kind of dwindling down. In terms of 2020, there's, you know, the kid from he played in the Under Armour event. I know Archie watched him Friday night. Mike Saunders, I think he plays at a prep school out in Utah, but is originally from Indianapolis. He's a name to also know from the 2020 class. And I'm sure, kind of as time goes along here, I mean, this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are, you know, evaluation period, and or not evaluation period, a recruiting period where coaches can go and actually conduct in-home visits. I mentioned Cross is going to have an in-home tomorrow. I think Caleb Love, I saw that reported, is going to have an in-home visit with Indiana today. So I think what we're seeing now is kind of a, you know, they went and saw Galloway and Leal obviously yesterday. They're going to see Love today. Who knows if they're making any other stops, and then Cross tomorrow. I think we're kind of getting some clarity on who the 2020 targets are at this point. But the thing I like, and this is no knock on Tom Crean and the way, you know, the previous staff recruited, the thing I like a little bit more about this approach is it seems to be a little bit more measured in terms of who the offers are going to, and having a plan. Now, that it's not necessarily going to say that it's going to work better if you offer less guys, but I think Indiana is being a little bit more conservative on who they're offering. You know, if you offer 40 or 50 guys, it's your off, what's your offer really worth? And I think Indiana is kind of trying to make that a little bit more of a commodity now. And so it'll be interesting to see. I think probably some more offers will come out here over the next couple of weeks, because as John mentioned, there's not a ton of guys out there actually have a 2020 offer at this point, but they've got a pretty good pool of guys. But you know, if I were to, that's one reason I've kind of stopped making recruiting boards two or three classes out, because I realized that when I did, the names that were on there on the initial one were like totally different from, you know, what comes into focus. I think the summer before senior year and into the fall, when official visits start to really heat up, that's when you can kind of get a good feel of who's going to be the primary targets. But right now, you know, I think we've talked, I think, about most of them on this podcast. And I think, you know, a guy like Cross kind of emerging over the weekend, he's a guy that Indiana obviously took an interest in going back to the high school season, and then saw him and then wanted to jump in with an offer. You may see a couple more situations like that pop up. You know, another guy, I think Zach Loveday, the big guy from Ohio, is another one that they've watched. And there's a ton of Big Ten schools interested in him. But it's ultimately, who can you get on campus? You know, I don't ever look at a situation as being super serious until a kid actually steps foot on campus and makes a visit. It's one thing to make an offer and have a kid say he wants to visit, but until they actually step foot on campus and meet with the coaching staff, have their parents on campus, it doesn't qualify to me as much of a serious situation.
You know, the 2020 class is such an interesting one too, because for Archie's first two seasons, you know, he really focused on the state. And the state had some top-level talent like Romeo Langford and Trace Jackson Davis and Keon Brooks. And in 2020, there's not that five-star guy. And so, you know, they've tried to branch out nationally with guys like Caleb Love and Ethan Morton that we talked about. Not necessarily five-star guys, but highly rated four-star guys. But, you know, I think, you know, some fans may look at it, you know, two straight McDonald's All-Americans and hear the class of 2020, not as many stars by some of these guys' names. You know, and part of that is just because I think the stature of the program isn't quite yet at the point where they're recruiting nationally, and the state just isn't, and maybe the local area is not producing as many five stars in this class. But John, as you look toward 2021, you've got Christian Lander out of Evansville, a potential five-star guy. You've got Caleb First from Blackhawk Christian, a potential five-star guy. Lander, I think, was in Dallas with the Indiana Elite Team, and you saw Caleb First, right, in Atlanta?
Yep.
And Indiana is involved with both of these guys. Not a clear leader by any means, anything like that, but they're involved early with both of these guys. They project as maybe the next top-level talent type guys in the state that Indiana will have a real chance with. What did you see from First playing up? They both were playing up a year, right?
Yep. They're both playing with the 17U team this weekend, and we'll be doing that this summer. And I actually saw Lander a few weeks ago, too, up in Indianapolis. But first, I mean, every time I see him, he's so impressive. He's physically gifted. He's not, you know, an elite athlete or anything like that, but he's legitimate 6'10", around 220 right now. Very strong, can beat his opponents in the paint. But he's also really good at facing up and taking guys off the dribble. And as someone that size and that young, you know, you don't see that a whole lot. And he shows the touch to have a decent stroke. He shot 1-3 this weekend and he made it. But I think he has the potential to take that out, take that shot out to the 3-point line at the next level, because he's got two more years to work on it. And every time I see him, he's another kid that I'm just increasingly impressed by. He talked about this weekend how he wants to be a more versatile defender, and that's what you want to hear out of a kid that age. You know, with not great lateral foot speed, you want to see him talk about, you know, being switchable, being an effective defender. And if he can become an effective defender, the sky's the limit with him. And he, you know, I don't think he's a one and done or anything like that, but he, you know, he could be a legitimate, you know, 2-3 year college player where he is an elite player that you know people are talking about for years to come. And Lander too is someone that, you know, playing up for him, it's harder when you're a lead guard like he is. You have the ball in your hands and you're sort of running the offense and you got to adjust to that higher level of competition. But when I saw him in Dallas, he did it incredibly well. I've never seen someone so fast but keep his head up at the same time and, you know, pay attention to the entire floor. He's got the vision to see things 2 steps ahead, and he does it while maintaining that speed, which is pretty impressive. You know, it allows him to get to the lane and, like I mentioned with other guys, navigate the lane well and find open spots to find teammates. But he's also a very good finisher with his left hand, which is his dominant hand. And you know, he can shoot it from deep as well. And I don't see a ton of mechanical flaws there. His feet are a little bit too far offset from what you'd like to see, but that can be altered over time. I'm not overly worried about it. But yeah, both those guys have a ton of upside, and then two guys that Indiana's heavily in on here early on. And of course, they're high school sophomores, so it's tough to you know, glean too much from the recruitments at this point, but Indiana's definitely heavily in the mix.
One last thing I wanted to talk about. We've heard a lot about how this recruiting calendar is a lot different because of some of the changes that were instituted. And, you know, we talked about this back when it happened, but now we're in the heart of it. Can you guys speak to the differences? Like in the past, right, there were two of these spring evaluation periods, right? And this year there's only one. And then I think there are some other evaluation periods coming up in June, but those are like scholastically sponsored events, so it's a little bit different. Can you just kind of give the lay of the land for those of us who aren't maybe steeped in all the details of that and why it matters? Like, what effect is this going to have on the coaches and the players?
Yeah, so the biggest difference is that first early April evaluation period is now gone. That live period where coaches could have been at that event that I was at in Indianapolis, coaches are usually flooding that. And now this year they couldn't be there. So now you're limiting teams to being able to see kids one time in the spring, which means less opportunities for the kids to get seen, giving them less opportunities to earn scholarships. So if you have one bad weekend, all of a sudden, you know, that's the only time the coaches can see you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Like you're just not going to get the offers that maybe you deserve because you have 3 bad days of playing. Whereas before, if you could get those 2 full weekends, you know, it was a real chance for coaches to see. And yes, it's still a small sample size of only, you know, 7-8 games, but 7-8 games is better than 3 or 4 games. And it gives the kids a chance to, you know, to have 2 separate occasions to show coaches what they can do. As far as the calendar outside of that, there is a very confusing evaluation period in June where it's like you can go to the top 100 camp if kids are invited there. There's also a scholastic period that I think, and I've talked to some coaches who still can't figure that out either, and they don't know really what's going on with it. So the NCAA has done a great job of creating a lot of confusion and making, you know, things chaotic as possible for college coaches. And then, of course, you have the live period in July, which will be the same week as this Peach Jam, which I plan on being down at and down in South Carolina. So yeah, they're really limiting how often these coaches can see these kids, and really only hurting the kids because they're not getting the chance to, you know, display what they can do, and the coaches don't get to see it. And then, you know, everyone ends up suffering in the end, which, you know, it's the NCAA.
It really does sound silly. I mean, so like this event that you were talking about last weekend that you're at, does this mean, like, is there a change at all in the relationship between people like you and coaches? Because if coaches can't be there, they're going to clearly want insight from people who were there. So do you find, you know, coaches reaching out to people like you more that were there to get insight on what happened?
So they tend to use actual scouting, NCAA approved scouting services, you know, because technically they're not allowed to, you know, talk to media members about stuff like that. So they use a lot of subscribed scouting services that the NCAA has for them and readily available that they can use, which is great. But at the same time, there's nothing like seeing a kid play in person, you know, and it sort of defeats the purpose of a lot of these events if you're not letting the people who really matter, because I like to think I matter, but I don't really matter. So the people who really matter can't go to these events, and all of a sudden, you know, kids aren't getting offers, kids aren't getting seen, and then it's just useless pool play for the shoe circuits.
Hmm. Alex, any thoughts on the recruiting calendar changes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it necessarily hurts like the five-star cream of the crop kids, because they're already known, they're already ranked, they're at things like USA Basketball, and they're like a known commodity. I think it hurts a guy like, for example, an OG Anunoby several years ago. You know, he was stumbled upon when I believe some coaches were there to watch another one of his teammates, and that was kind of a direct result of having more opportunities to go watch guys. And now, you know, not only is April shortened, July, I believe, is going to be there's going to be less opportunities to go see guys in July. There's going to be, obviously, what John mentioned, that weekend with Peach Jam. And then after that, I want to say there's the NCAA approved camps, which are going to be stationed throughout the country. I think the one probably closest to us is going to be at the University of Illinois. So it'll have, I believe, probably a lot of the kids who wish to participate from this part of the country who are invited. It's unclear how the invitations for that are going to be handed out, but I think you're hurting the mid-major and low-major schools more because the kids are going to go to those schools just because they have less opportunity to be seen. You know, because, you know, everyone knows who Christian Lander is right now. The schools that want to recruit him have the available information to be able to see him. But if there's a teammate of his who maybe hasn't been seen, and now he won't have the opportunity to play in front of coaches as often, I think it hurts kids like that more than anything else. And the other thing, I don't kind of, and not to go on a soapbox about this, is, you know, the NCAA is, there's been a lot of talk, and I don't necessarily subscribe to this whole theory that there's a problem with transfers, because I think guys should just be able to leave and go wherever they want, whenever they want. I mean, a coach can do that, but there's a lot of national media, I'm not going to name any by name, but I think we all know who I'm talking about, who's called this an epidemic. Well, if you want coaches and guys, players to have better relationships and have a chance to know each other better and be more familiar with them, why wouldn't you want to give them more opportunities to find the right fit and be able to, you know, if a coach can only watch a kid play a couple times in the summer, maybe his evaluation wouldn't be as good as if he had a chance to watch him more often. So I just think it's all reactive based on the FBI stuff. The NCAA, to me, they're literally just going to kick the can down the road, right? Like they're not going to actually step in and try to fix any of these quote unquote problems, which is actually, you know, this, that we have a black market for recruits that are being paid under the table, where, you know, this all needs to come above ground and we need to figure out a way to properly compensate these guys. But instead, we're changing the recruiting calendar because for some reason the shoe circuit events, who most of the people who made these decisions have never been to one of these events. They're some of the best things you can go to watch high level basketball, way better than watching a high school game. But for some reason they're the root of all evil because these shoe companies are paying guys and all this. So we could probably talk for hours about this. John probably has his own thoughts, but really it's stupid garbage that the NCAA, I hope I'm clear on that, stupid garbage that the NCAA has instituted to fix a problem, and it's really not helping anybody involved.
Yeah, and to piggyback off that, I could go on for hours. I could, like, this is not a rant you guys want to hear me go on, because we'll be here until tomorrow evening about me just ranting and raving about how awful the new setup is and how it disadvantages, you know, almost everybody. For instance, I mentioned Nigel Pack playing well. If he didn't play well this weekend, he's not getting some of those offers that he's starting to reel in now. And then all of a sudden you're looking at a kid who doesn't have the opportunities that he's deserved, just because, like I said, four bad games can all of a sudden, you know, take that away from you, just because it's the only chance coaches get until July, or, you know, if you're a select group at the top 100 camp, I believe in June. And, you know, I'm anxious to see how those the invited camps in July work out. I'm sure they're going to go swimmingly and there won't be any faults in those, you know, throughout the entire time they're trying to set it up with all that. So yeah, it's created a mess and an unwarranted mess. And it's just a weird reaction to have to the FBI scandal. It goes back to the old, when Duke commits recruiting violations, UC Davis gets punished for it type of thing. And it's like, I don't understand what the purpose of what they're doing is. And I don't think many people do.
Yeah, you know, on the one hand, there have been some good changes allowing kids to take more official visits. I think that will actually help, you know, reduce potential transfers, because that's good. Get kids on campus more. And I think they can visit a school more than once if they want to, once when they're junior, once when they're a senior, so they can see it more. You know, some of the stuff with letting kids leave early and hire an agent and still come back, that stuff makes good sense. But then this other stuff, it's like you move in the right direction on one thing, and then on the other one, you go in the complete opposite direction. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But for our purposes, you know, we're interested in who Indiana's going to get in their future classes. And Alex, as you said, we got some clarity on that. And obviously, you know, again, the names that Indiana fans are really, really, really thinking about are those in-state names, Trey Galloway and Anthony Leal. So they both got offers, and now we'll see where it goes from there. I think both guys talked about wanting to set up official visits, because they've been to Indiana on unofficial visits. Neither one has yet taken an official visit. So, you know, if you're looking at, you know, hey, these are in-state guys, why aren't they committing? Well, let's just wait until they do their official visit. That'll kind of be the next step, and then we'll see what goes from there. Any final thoughts on the recruiting weekend as a whole, John, and Galloway and Leal in particular, before we close out?
Yeah, I just, you know, I had a lot of fun this weekend, and I know a lot of people enjoy those events, like you said, and it's a shame that they're, you know, taking away something that can be fun for people and, you know, can be enjoyable experiences. But, you know, I think a lot of good things came out of the weekend, especially for Indiana. They got to see a lot of these kids that they normally wouldn't get the chance to see, and they should have had the chance to see 2 weeks ago. But, you know, again, that goes back to that rant that I'm not going to go on today. But yeah, I think it opened a lot of doors, and I think we'll see some offers go out in the coming days. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see something change quickly with one of Leal or Galloway. You know, those things move fast, and especially with both them being Indiana kids, it's going to be interesting to see how that scholarship situation plays out, especially like you said, we've got two openings in this class still. And, you know, right now it doesn't seem like both are going to get filled. So it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do with one of, if not both, of the scholarships down the road.
Absolutely. Alex, any final thoughts before we head on out?
No, I think I want to conclude my appearance today with just my last rant and the applause you gave me, so we can end it on that.
We like it when you get up on your soapbox, Alex. It's good. It is good.
Yeah, I'm not. The most, I guess, interesting thing we may see in June, other than the MBPA top 100 camp, I think Indiana's having two team camps as well. So we'll see who comes to those and who plays. That's kind of another free opportunity to showcase your program. I think that's a really smart thing that Archie Miller instituted that the previous coaching staff didn't do, at least with any regularity. So I think those are like consecutive Saturdays at some point in June that they're going to have team camps. So those are always a good event as well.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here for another week of Podcast on the Brink. And John, thank you very much for joining us. You can follow John on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle?
It's jsauberth on Twitter. It's the best way to find me. You know, I'm pretty accessible on there. Email's on there, too, if anyone ever has, you know, any fun things they want to send me. Please don't complain to that email address. It's all I ask.
You can read his work and, of course, Stu Jackson over at thehoosier.com, and listen to their podcast, too, Heard on the Hoosier. They put some really good stuff out on there, so we highly recommend that as well. All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week on a brand new edition of Podcast on the Brink. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com, and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.